مرحبا. Yes, مرحبا في Music for Human. I am الدكتور جالس السكران and I welcome you.
And I am here to welcome you as well on this beautiful cathartic day.
Yes, welcome also to you, Aurora, speech specialist.
Namaste.
Namaste alaik. We are here on this most glorious evening, calling out to you with messages from over 100 subtropical creatures, singing out their passion in colorful melody.
You can almost see them with your ears.
We want you to listen and to reach out also to us with your heart and breath with your ear.
Such a fitting melody.
It is extremely harmonious. It recalls to my mind the first time that I was in Brazil and how extremely loud silence seemed to me there, because coming from the desert, silence is the norm. And although, you know, you can spontaneously fill the whole of the earth around you with an echo, it is rare that any creature will answer back.
So true. It's a wonderful thought that silence can affect you so, that silence can be indeed loud. This thought has been used by so many visionaries in the past.
It's true. But the silence, when it first struck me that the silence was not as silent there as it was in my home, I fell to a great revelation, which is a thing I cannot put into words, but I think it was one of my first real steps towards enlightenment. And I began to have lucid dreams. I had visions where I was in control and very aware that I was experiencing a visionary experience.
Now, it's often very difficult for people to allow themselves to melt into lucid dreams and to learn to control them. Were there any triggers or any meditations or thought processes?
I'll tell you, exactly what happened was that I was there, I was in the Amazon for probably at that point 3 or 4 weeks, and I had not really learned to stop and to be aware of what my body tells me. So I could not sleep, and I grew more and more frustrated, I think, until I reached a point where I was forced to understand the messages that were screaming at me, which were, there is no silence here. And once I had internalized this, that even in the middle of the night, that these animals would be screaming at me, I simply began to, you know, in my visions, in my dreams, when I did manage to dream, for the most part, I did experience silence, because that is how I was raised. Is that clear? So I found myself in my visions in my home area. And eventually, after weeks and weeks, I would be able to distinguish between the vision and reality by the presence or absence of true silence. And it was this that awakened me. I began to observe it, and it was as though you look and you realize for a moment that you cannot see your own nose, which is something that you usually ignore. But in a dream, I have found, it is rare that you can see your own nose.
And it's exactly that way that most people find themselves in lucid dreams, by sending themselves these messages, these little triggers that tell them this is not real. And that's what you did with the silence and with your lack of nose.
Precisely. Nose-knacking, and it became a trigger for me that said, ah, Jalis, you are reclining at this moment in some reality, but in this reality you are the master. And this was the beginning of one of the greatest explorations of myself that I ever experienced.
Did you find yourself walking along any spirit planes or tracks?
At first, I hesitate to use the word hedonistic, but I think that is the most appropriate thing. I began to think, I'm in control, what do I want? And I would, for example, while fasting, enjoy the most outrageous meals in my dreams. But over time, I realized that what I really wanted was growth, that while I was fasting, I preferred not to be able to eat, but to remove from myself the desire for food. And I gradually began to explore and put myself into situations and to learn over time to behave in a similar way, but to enjoy the possibility of that exploration, the journey there, which I cannot have here.
I must say, I am so touched by your story.
It touched me to experience it.
The only time that I ever managed to slip into a lucid dream, it was not on purpose. I did not reach out for it. It reached out for me. And there I was, a child, running along the gravel, crying, scared, until I realized, oh my feet, they are not in pain. My throat is not aching with the salt of my tears and mucus. And I reached up to touch my face, and I realized that I could do what I wanted. But all I wanted at that time was to call home. It was to see my mother and try to reach out to her on the soul plane.
And was the reaching out fruitful?
I attempted at first, and a voice entered my head. I don't know if it was my own consciousness or if it was the world around me screaming, no, you do not do this, Aurora. This is not your time. It is not your place. And so I let myself drift off, knowing that I was not to touch her or to see her. And I've never since attempted to enter that state again.
It's extremely moving. But I think so much can be gained that sometimes the experience of being tempted or of having some control and seeing what you will do with it is a valuable one, whether it is real or it is an imagination experience.
Of course, it allows you to see your true boundaries, and it allows you to understand how strong you truly are, how you can allow the thing you want most to slip through your grasp because you know it is not right. And perhaps there will be a time in the future when it is. for now, there are other ways to slip into semi-lucid awareness. I often enjoy reclining on soft mattresses with the scent of lilac in the air after having sipped my favorite combination of Peace Child Peter's herbal teas. And I allow my mind to drift as I hum peacefully and happily to myself. Although I'm not asleep, I am lucid, and I can reach out with my mind anywhere. And there's beauty in that. Just as there's beauty in the rain that falls down upon our faces.
And where were you when all of these experiences happened? Where were you corporeally?
Physically.
Precisely.
I was, at this time, in the first time when I entered the lucid dream, I was in Canada.
Also in the forest?
Well, I was by the Great Lakes. I was sitting by one of the lakes, staring off. And in a spot that was so beautiful because you could almost feel the presence of the shore on the other side. But you couldn't quite see it. And the mist lay upon the lake, touching it gracefully. And you could feel a great wind passing through you.
But critically and importantly, ultimately and finally, there was an embrace there. There was...
Oh, there's an embrace everywhere.
Do you think that a fetus in the womb of its mother, also in the greatest embrace, I think, that any creature experiences in this life, does it also dream? And if so, are the dreams lucid?
I've had many, many patients with child who've come to me because their children, their offspring, their seed were inside of them, seemed to be distressed and seemed to kick often and seemed scared at night to turn around and sit on their bladders and make them pee. And I would soothe them with my voice, and I would allow her to enter a deep sleep, and I would run my hand along her belly and calm the child. So yes, I do believe they dream.
And what are they dreaming of?
Normally, in the resonances that I sense from them, their dreams are sound. They dream sound, but no real pictures. Perhaps they dream of worms strangling them. I'm not sure.
The argument might be that having never seen themselves, that they would not have any indication of what vision would be like. And I think there is some truth to that.
But at the same time, their brains, at the later stage in the later trimesters, are developed enough to have a visual input.
That's true. Perhaps the seeds are there, but just as the seeds can grow if they are properly nurtured, they can wither and fade and die if they are deprived of light and food and water.
If any parents out there would like to call in and discuss fetus dreams or young baby dreams with us.
Or indeed, we have all been fetuses, even those of us who are not parents. So if anyone would like to call in with a input on this, our number is 617-253-8810.
And we have two lines open to widen our circle. But yes, the fetal dreams remind me of rain. I always feel great comfort. On days like today, when the rain pours from the skies, and you feel the world leaking upon you, it reminds me. It reminds me of my youth for some unknown reason.
I think that in my life, the most nurturing moments, the moments especially in my youth, I remember a great thirst. And it has something to do with, again, being a child, that we would also dream of water in the desert in the dry times.
Do you find rain then to be especially joyous an occasion?
I do. I know that I have known families and children here who have had nightmares associated with water. I even knew one young girl who would vomit every time it would, you know, there would be a particularly severe rainstorm. But to me, rain was always a hopeful thing, and nothing really is so beautiful as the sound of the pitter-patter of the droplets of rain nurturing things. Although I must add that to anyone that has ever imagined a length of time, perhaps a rain for a month non-stop, that it must simply drive one mad to not be able to escape, and it must be difficult, as I found it difficult to lose silence, to not be able to find it when one is seeking it.
And also, I imagine, not see our mother's sun shining so beautifully upon us.
I remember how maddening it was to not be able to really see the stars when I first went to the city. I mean, one can see some stars, but when you are living in the desert, it seems so close that one could simply reach out and grab a planet.
If you were to grab a planet...
Well, I think due to the mass of the object, certainly catastrophe would ensue.
Spiritually grab a planet.
This is where lucid dreaming comes in and really enables you to experiment.
So what would you suggest that our callers do, those, our listeners, those who wish to engage in lucid dreaming?
Well, I think it's important several times a day to count one's fingers and to look at one's nose and so on, because once one is in the habit of doing these things, sooner or later, a particularly vivid dream, you will also look at your hand and you will experience something elegiacal, which is more like you will notice that you perhaps do not have five fingers or your nose is missing, and suddenly you realize that you must be dreaming. And at that moment, it is time to experiment with control.
It's interesting, last night, perhaps in anticipation of rain, I dreamt I was a frog. And in the real physical plane, I reached out and touched myself and woke with a great start to find my skin dry and to find me so awfully and horrifyingly disfigured. Then I realized I'm not a frog. I'm a woman. And the frog inside me mourned.
I once had a dream, a vision, that I was a dog And at first, you know, I was... It seems always that in one's visions that no one is too shocked by one's reality, but when I awoke, I found that I maintained many dog-like properties. I kept that sense of smell for weeks. Let's bring another voice in to join us. Caller, marhaban.
Oh, I might be in a zone where I get cut out.
Well...
Hello?
Well, caller, you know, stay with us as long as you can.
Oh, all right. Lovely. I'm on hold, apparently. I have no idea. I want to stop saying... Oh, darling.
Everyone's a little insane inside themselves.
Caller?
Hello?
Yes, we are with you.
Oh, good. Oh, good. Do you have a regular program?
Yes, we are. And you are actually on the air, caller.
Oh, I'm sorry.
No.
We're actually driving through the rain, and it is lovely. And we caught your channel and wanted to say hello. I'm glad I got the right phone number. The rain is very healing, very soothing, very cleansing, and we're enjoying it very much. It's bringing so much greenery to this spring season.
Well, thank you so much for joining our circle, caller.
And are you regularly on once a week?
Yes, precisely, caller. We are on every... Friday at 7.
Oh, lovely, lovely. I will be sure to catch you again. And take care. Enjoy.
Well, thank you, caller.
Bye-bye.
It is so terrific to be enjoying the rain and enjoying it as it's falling and enjoy all of the fruits that come to be born with the rain. It evokes so many things.
And yet one must be careful to not enjoy too much rain.
Well, I've never had the experience of being able to actually call down the rain at any moment, but I think that that would be a terrifying one.
Yes, it would be. But I meant to walk out in the rain and stay there for hours, as I have done before. And when I went inside to sit by the fire, I realized that I was a grape that had shriveled up in my fingers and my skin.
You were a raisin.
Precisely. But a wet raisin.
There is a legend of a great American king who became the ruler of the country at an elderly age. In order to show his strength, he stepped out into the rain and I believe also the snow to give his great address upon his coronation, the beginning of his reign. And he later died within, I think, 1 month, and he was the most brief ruler of the country.
He died due to rain-associated complications.
Super pneumonia.
And that's the beauty in learning one's limitations at a young age. We often chafe when our parents tell us, put on these socks, wear this paper bag over your head. You
put
need
on
it.
These earmuffs.
Yes.
And put this wax under the earmuffs. And really protect your ear as well as the rest of the body.
But the lesson there is just amazing.
The lesson is that your parents are embracing you very literally with wool, and it's a protection that will carry on as long as you live beyond the lives of your parents.
And it's because they cherish you. They cherish your physicality and your wondrous mentality and soul, that they wish to preserve you.
And even if it's not very wondrous?
To them, it is always wondrous.
Even if it is not wondrous to them? even then, even if they don't like you.
It's even more amazing.
I'm amazed. It amazes me.
One of the most beautiful sights is to watch the rain pitter-patter down upon the lakes, and to watch each droplet melt into the great body, and you can see yourself, a single droplet, melting into the great consciousness just in the same way, creating a tiny ripple for a moment of time.
When many, many months ago, one of our callers noted that a lake that was full of ducks and on which the sun beat was making an infusion of ducks, which may be called duck tea. And it's amazing also to think about what happens to duck tea in the rain. It is diluted duck tea, and it is diluted with cloud tea.
But in the same sense, there's just so much more of it then.
There is more tea and less the flavor of ducks.
I assume it would be somewhat of a fishy broth as well. That you mention this. When I was in Zurich, there's a great lake there as well. But the ducks, they seem too good to be actually in the lake, and they often enjoyed resting upon the many boats or attacking tourists on the shore. So perhaps that would be much less of a duck tea and much more of a boat tea. And a tourist tea.
Indeed, and tourist tea, of course, is an unusual mixture.
It is. It's amazing how a person's identity can change so when they're visiting other places. They're no longer a human. They're a tourist. And it makes you wonder how difficult it is to be accepted globally. Those who live in a big city and often see new people around them constantly engaging in the city life and seeing the sights, they often become frustrated, because to them these people are like popcorn, and they've been surrounded by popcorn and completely drenched in popcorn for so long that the mere thought of popcorn, the smell of popcorn, the hint would drive them mad. And so is the plight of tourists. Someone who so hates this popcorn from one city may eventually visit another and become themselves popcorn for a short amount of time. So it is with so many things. We don't realize, but often the annoyances and the pain that we are caused, we continue to cause others. The same exact annoyances, the same exact pain. It's a never-ending cycle. But I believe it can stop. That's why when I visit new places, in order to not be that popcorn, I often dress in an extremely unusual manner, or I avoid the large cities. It is often easy to not be popcorn if you do something that is unusual, such as walk around with a tiny chicken on your shoulders. Or to constantly walk backwards. Then suddenly you are not a tourist. You are not merely a pigeon-like person feeding off of the city and seeing its sights like so many others. You are a strange person. You are a unique entity, perhaps laughed at, perhaps mocked. But at least you can rest and realize that you have not caused popcorn pain, that you have not just been a normal tourist. We have such a beautiful selection of songs today. So fitting for the weather.
Yeah, these songs, of course, were sent to us from Japan, from one of our regular listeners. So, thank you, Hiroshi.
And these piano pieces are beautiful as well.
Yeah, we are also very appreciative of any listeners that do like to send us music. We love to put, you know, these things on the air.
That truly allows us to be music for human beings.
And also by human beings, precisely.
And again, let's give out that number. 617-253-8810. We'd love to hear from you.
Because it's not just about music here on Music for Human Beings. Because music can mean other things also.
There's so many musings, so many things we can learn from you, so many ways when two souls collide.
It really could be problematic because sometimes people will die in soul interactions. The strike can really damage things. Let's bring that voice on the air. Caller, marhaban.
Welcome, caller. You are on the air.
Greetings.
And greetings to you also, caller.
It's hard to hear you right now. I was wondering maybe if you could turn the phone up, maybe?
Let's try to do that.
Well, let me turn myself up. That might help. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you well, caller.
I can hear you. Is it true that you guys are talking about lucid dreaming today?
We were, yeah. We sort of let the flow of the discussion carry in its own.
Okay, because I received a message from my friend, and she said that she was tuning in to the program and that you guys were talking about lucid dreaming, and
precisely.
That is one interest of mine as well as music. And now that I'm tuning in, I'm driving back home after teaching a piano lesson, actually. So I have both lucid dreaming and music as
on your mind.
Two things. Yes, exactly.
Well, caller, have you ever had any personal experiences with a lucid dream?
I'm sorry, the question got lost in this rainstorm. It's kind of hard to hear.
Aurora asked if you had any personal experience with any lucid dreams of your own.
Yes. I practice, and I'm trying to back into the practice. What I end up doing is I may practice for a few months at a time, and then I kind of fall off of it for a period, and then I go back to it somehow.
And it seems
to come in cycles.
So there are exercises that you do to induce lucid dreaming?
Yes. Journaling is very, very helpful, important tool to journal the dreams. But there are specific techniques that I use to assist me in becoming lucid within a dream.
Could you share any of those techniques? I'm sure our listeners would love to know them.
Sure. Actually, one technique I use is repeating a phrase as I'm falling asleep. And the phrase I use, I use a few different phrases, but one of the main phrases I use is, I am completely aware while dreaming. I am completely aware while dreaming. So I'll repeat that in my mind as I'm drifting off to sleep. And what that seems to do is repeating the phrase as you're falling asleep helps to kind of bring that phrase into the subconscious mind, and it seems to assist with the process of waking up within the dream state.
That's a really, really great technique, caller.
Yes. And for me, I notice that if I start to practice with this technique, along with the journaling is also a counterpart. You know, it's very, very important to journal.
So you record also the contents of the dreams that you remember. This is what you mean by journaling?
It's easier to remember the dreams if you're in the habit of journaling, because it's working that part of the brain. By journaling, you're tapping in to that area of the brain. So it's becoming accustomed to remember. As you journal, you are actually working the memory in that area. And then the next time you dream, you're a little bit more fit to
record it.
To recall it.
Mm.
And then so what I've noticed is even if somebody doesn't have a lot of experience, if they stick with it for a few days, and they might not have any results for a few days, but if they're diligent, after a few days, they might see some results, and then after a week or a month, you may see even, further development. But so what happens sometimes is, first 1 or 2 or 3 days, nothing happens, and then, people will give up. But even if nothing happens on those first couple days, there are things happening. We're just not necessarily aware of them consciously. And by practicing that technique or other techniques that may be suitable, because there may be other techniques that are more suitable for other people, but I find those two combination of the journaling and the repetitive phrase to be very beneficial in inducing the lucid dreams. And even if no lucid dream happens, regular dreaming that is not necessarily considered lucid is beneficial too, and important to journal that as well.
So, Caller, why don't we bring another voice on the air to join in this circle? And
sounds good.
Caller 2, marhaban. Caller?
Hello?
Hello?
Yes, welcome, caller.
Welcome, both of you.
Hi.
Hello?
Welcome, caller.
I'm calling because WMBR aired a program on lucid dreaming Monday night at midnight. And if you go to the archives, you can listen to it.
Oh, that's wonderful, caller. Thank you.
Oh, what was that? I missed that. I'm actually pulling into a parking lot so I can better concentrate.
Well, what the second caller remarked upon was that on Monday night at midnight there was a program on this radio station WMBR about lucid dreaming, and that you can access it on our archives.
Oh, nice.
Which is great.
And it gave seven steps to lucid dreaming, and was kind of dreamy in its presentation, but very informative.
That does sound very interesting, caller. And, in general, it's also good to know for our listeners that our archives are available at WMBR.org. And Music for Human Beings archives are available at musicforhumanbeings.com.
But it's amazing.
MBR.org, did you say?
WMBR.org.
WMBR.
It's amazing that.
And then you go to archives and you go to the time when the show aired and let you know the name of the show.
That lucid dreaming appears to be in the air, that so many of us are thinking of it at this moment in time.
Yeah, they were reading from a book called Creative Dreaming.
Interesting.
I've never heard of that book.
I wonder if either of the callers have heard of the techniques that I sort of independently discovered. I rarely have discussed my lucid dreams with others. I only recently discovered that this was the technical term for this sort of dreaming. But these techniques, which are of paying attention, like counting fingers and looking at one's nose and paying attention to the sound of silence, to these methods for discriminating between reality and imaginity.
So you do that within the dream?
I do it constantly as a reflex. When I'm doing nothing else, I will look at my hand. And so in a dream, inevitably, reality finds its way into it. And so these habits that I have developed there, I mean, as a pianist yourself, I'm sure that you have had dreams of playing the piano.
Sure.
So similarly, the habits that one creates, the reflexes, they find their ways into the dream. And so I find myself counting my fingers in my dream.
Right.
And any unusual result, such as seven or three.
You mean seven fingers?
Precisely.
Instead of ten?
Precisely. No, right. Exactly right. And then I suddenly say to myself, my hand appears to be perfectly formed and no mutilation has occurred. Hence, I must be dreaming.
So if you have seven fingers, you know you're dreaming.
Precisely.
You hope you're
so
dreaming.
Have you ever had ten fingers in a dream?
I'm not sure. How would I know? I think that
you would miss by paying attention to your dream and looking at your hands in your dreams.
No,
that creative dreaming does too, is to make you conscious of bringing your dreams into your waking life as you bring your waking life into your dream life.
What I'm trying to say is that generally the way that I know that I'm dreaming is because I have the wrong number of fingers. So I think I do not remember ever having a dream, checking my hands, and finding 10 fingers.
Interesting, yeah.
Well, and callers, do either of you wish to share your favorite or perhaps one of your most interesting lucid dreams?
Thank you for your program. I have to hang up now because I'm in traffic, but I appreciate your show and your thoughts and the ideas that you bring to others.
Well, thank you so much for calling in.
Thank you for being with us also, caller. If anyone else would like to call in and join for the final 10 minutes of our program, the number is 617-253-8810. And caller, how long have you been lucidly dreaming?
Well, I think all my life, but I think it became more of an interest later on, where it's funny because it's almost like as a young child, I was more of a natural at it. Now it seems like I have to work at it.
That is interesting.
It's often a repeated, thing when you're a young child. A lot of people think that those times that you don't remember, you could actually see the auras sort of surrounding other people before your mind was shut off.
Yeah, but mind is more open, I think. And
there's more flexibility and growth, I think, there also. Let's bring a voice in. We have several callers. Caller 3, marhaban.
Hello.
Welcome, caller.
I was wondering how you guys feel about using science to complete the human spiritual life cycle.
Well, caller, I love that question. I actually studied physics for a couple of years to greater understand my vocal practice and to understand and dive into quantum mechanics and how it can sort of explain my spirituality or help to form it.
Yeah, well, I'm mostly interested in, like, genetic engineering, because the way I see it, we start our journey into the physical world from the womb, and I think that if we were able to create a being or a woman large enough, with a womb large enough, we could also end our journey there and begin our spiritual life by crawling into it.
Or perhaps we could genetically engineer a bean to feel and appear like a womb and to climb into the bean husk.
Yeah, that's kind of what I'm working on. I'm starting some biohacking and working on the genome so that we could have a giant Earth womb.
I think that to some extent we already crawl back into the Earth, and that really is nature's womb, and I'm not sure if that is a reaction.
We're in the womb right now.
We are in the womb. We are.
Yeah, the earth is the womb.
Because it's raining?
No, because we are enclosed, and we are embraced.
I see.
This is the cocoon. We're in cocoon.
The earth is our mother, and it nurtures us. And it shelters us.
That's an interesting concept.
And I think that the sky would have to be our father.
But on the more physical plane, your research sounds very interesting to me. To be able to physically crawl into a womb at a later age and feel that sort of tight presence around you.
Yeah, and while I'm working on my research, I mean, we don't have a living being like that now, but I enjoy spending, as much time or as much of myself as I can fit into whatever wombs I can find.
Well, you often hear stories about, people going off into the wilderness with a horse, perhaps. and ending up in somewhere like a cold tundra, and having to choose to kill the horse, slice open its belly, and crawl into its cavity in order to stay warm. And I believe that is a very close approximation of what a womb would feel like.
Sometimes survival forces you to make these very difficult decisions. This is one thing that I value about lucid dreaming, is that at the moment, there is a critical moment in life where hesitation can mean just as great and grave consequences as a poor decision. And a lucid dream enables you to prepare yourself and steel yourself for the decisions that you have to make. I remember being lost in the desert once as a very young child. This experience scarred me and shaped me for the rest of my life. Because I was gone for weeks and finding no water, I was forced to face the decision of either dying or sucking the juice from the beetles and the rare things that I found. And I chose in a raw moment to live. And these were the decisions that I made.
Now, was this in a dream, or was it in reality?
No, this was real.
I think that because of my overwhelming compassion in such a situation, I would offer my own juices to the beetle.
Precisely. And this is the choice, because we idealize. And one may say to oneself that I would sooner die myself than slaughter my horse and use its body to survive. But at that moment, at the moment when life is escaping you, you may find that you regret not clawing at life with every atom of strength.
That's why I own a very tiny horse, so that I don't ever have to make that decision. It's a pony, actually.
My horse is under 1 foot tall.
Yeah, there are miniature horses. There is a whole breed of very small horses.
Under a foot.
Used to guide blind people. Or to assist those with
I think that the size of a person's horse could be an inverse measure to their compassion.
Perhaps, or their desire to live.
Very true.
Well, callers, I'm afraid we are just reaching the end of our time.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you for listening and for calling out and for being with us.
Namaste.
Namaste.
Thank you also to Aurora, who is here again with me and tolerating my terrible English.
Your English is wonderful. Thank you for having me today.
Your English is also wonderful, Aurora. And to the many listeners and speakers out there in the beautiful world, your English is wonderful. We think so, here at Music for Human Beings, which is New Age Talk Radio with an emphasis on you. We are on every Friday at 7 p.m. and we would like to be on with you here on WMBR Cambridge, the Great 88. Stay tuned next for Acts Beyond Words. Ma'a salama.
for safety.
Number one.
Cars and bikes stop at red lights.
It's against the law for car drivers or bicycle riders to ignore traffic signals.
So don't buzz through red lights. There might be a pedestrian or turning car that doesn't see you coming.
Number two.
Look first before you open your door.
Numerous bicyclists have been injured or even killed by car doors suddenly opening into them.
Look first, and bicyclists, stay out of the door zone.
Number three.
Cross with the signal.
You are safest if you wait for a walk or green traffic signal.
Don't jaywalk. That's just walking into trouble.
Number four.
Cars and bikes should stop for pedestrians in unsignalized crosswalks.
Be nice. Be legal. Be safe.
Brought to you as a public service by the Cambridge Bicycle Committee and this station.